5 to 6 or 6:30.
Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome back. The band is back together again. Welcome to our January 12th meeting of our Joint Committee on Transportation. We have a little bit of work to do today. The first thing I'm going to do is open an informational hearing and invite our staff from the Oregon Department of Transportation up to do a report on streamlining of Connect Oregon. Welcome.
Thank you.
We've worn them down. They can only afford to send one now.
Oh, no. They got a phalanx back there.
I know, but they're all by the door. All by the door ready to bolt.
Quickest it's Friday afternoon.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Hovig. I'm the planning section manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And I'm here to talk about the Connect Oregon Streamlining Report. As you recall, in House Bill 2017, Section 85 required the Oregon Transportation Commission to submit a report to this body outlining methods and processes to streamline the application submittal process for the Connect Oregon program. The Oregon Transportation Commission prepared that report and did submit that on December 7th. The Connect Oregon program...
Madam Chair.
To the left.
Senator Johnson.
I'm not going to listen to another word you say unless I get this question answered, just because I can't concentrate on it. Who is the author? Was there some kind of a committee? Was there input from applicants? What were the foundational documents or information against which the OTC drew to produce their report?
Chair McEwen and Senator Johnson, the staff for the Connect Oregon program prepared the report for the Oregon Transportation Commission and submitted that to them. We used a number of sources of information. One of those sources was a survey that was sent out to all previous applicants of the Connect Oregon program. We also did some phone interviews with a number of those applicants, and staff ourselves did an assessment of the form and the application submittal process as well.
Okay, follow up. So you were focused on the paperwork submittals. Did you delve into the process? I mean, Connect Oregon is a kabuki theater that moves through a variety of stage sets. And having done that, I think on every single one of them, from act to final decision, there is, in my opinion, room for improvement along that continuum. So what part of Connect Oregon streamlining did you focus on?
Chair McEwen, Senator Johnson, we really focused on the application submittal process and the application form itself. We did not look at the rest of the Connect Oregon process, of which you spoke about. There's many moving parts in that process of after applications are submitted, reviewed, scored, prioritized, and eventually selected and recommended for funding to the Transportation Commission.
So
we focused only on the application submittal process itself.
One last question.
Certainly.
Will there be an opportunity to look at the rest of the continuum, including project completion and closeout?
Chair McEwen, Senator Johnson, we will be looking at the process as we start to move into implementation of another portion of House Bill 2017, which has created both a Part 1 and Part 2 of the Connect Oregon program. We'll have to enter into rulemaking processes for that process, and that's where we can look to see if there's some additional work around the Connect Oregon program overall and expectations.
The horse is dead. I'm done beating.
And Senator Johnson and committee, for the record, I failed to mention that Representative Smith is excused today. He's on doing things out of the building during this entire week, so he is not here. And I know that he had some questions about this as well, was very intimately involved in the process over the last however many sessions, and I think some of these questions came from him as well. So I'd like to acknowledge that in his absence.
Thank you.
Please
proceed.
So the Connect Oregon program has been around for a number of cycles, and we have always been looking for ways to improve the Connect Oregon application. Through 6 rounds of the program, we have tried to make sure we make the application form as best as we can to streamline that information, but while also still ensuring we're getting the right information to help make the project selection process select the right kinds of projects that are ready and will add benefit to the state of Oregon. From the streamlining report, we've identified three areas that we think we can improve the application submittal process. The first is to develop the form into more of an online submittal tool. Right now, it's more of a PDF document that you have to fill out, so using an online tool will be more streamlined. We need to remove questions around non-eligible modes of that are no longer eligible for the Connect Oregon program. And finally, we do have some redundancy in our questions and trying to make sure we're trying to get the right kinds of benefits for these projects. We can remove those redundant questions. The online application form will have a lot of benefits, we believe. First is we'll have more autofill fields that you can fill out and copy information. You won't have to be doing that redundantly multiple times. We'll be able to use some auto features around the mathematics and the calculations to minimize errors. There's always seems to be errors around doing match and other kinds of additive things in these forms. And another big feature is applicants will be able to start the application, stop midstream, collect information, and come back, where right now that's a much harder thing to do. It's more of a one-shot kind of approach. And then finally, uploading documents. We want to move to more of a cloud-based system, which is more of the industry standard. That will make it a lot easier and friendlier for applicants to attach their documents and supporting materials and upload them into the system. Removing the non-eligible modes will help shorten the form. As you're aware, out of House Bill 2017, transit was removed as an eligible mode for the Connect Oregon program, so we don't need questions around transit in the form anymore. Similarly, bike ped types of projects have been carved out a little bit separately than Connect Oregon, so we can help streamline that portion. And then finally, just removing the redundant questions. What we really found as we looked at this, there's a lot of different ways to get benefits and information from applicants about why their project makes a lot of sense and why it should be selected. We have some of those questions that are in there multiple times. We can streamline those to make them more effective so applicants only have to answer that once. In addition, it's important to note with these streamlining efforts that this would really only apply to the new Part 1 of the Connect Oregon program, because as we move to Part 2, the focus there is more on strategic statewide significant projects. So we'll have to think about what does that form of the application look like to answer those questions. And there's a number of those conditions and criteria outlined out of House Bill 2017 we'll have to build in. And that's really the outline of our streamlining report.
Senator Johnson.
Could you elaborate on that? Because for some of this panel and certainly for people with projects, that's incredibly important. Have you given any thought to how those statewide significant projects are defined? And then the second thing that I would ask is, what level of coordination is there among other grant programs that are doing projects? And how do we avoid what I'm going to refer to as queue jumping? And how do we ascertain that these projects don't have other sources of funds? My point is that regional solutions, in my opinion, instead of being a collaborative problem-solving mechanism, is now moving into just give us the money and we'll go do the projects. And I want to make sure that there's some level of coordination so that we're not multiple funding single projects, that we're talking to each other, that the projects make sense to a broad swath of people, not just a handful of folks that want to pitch, I don't know, moving an airport. I just made that up. I mean, that would be a huge undertaking and require an enormous amount of cooperation. And I just don't know where the ground truthing is on some of these projects. And what's bothered me a lot about the regional solution stuff is that they're sort of dropping in over the top of the acts, and they're dropping in over the top of other projects. And so far, the coordination has been, in my opinion, pretty deficient. And if projects of statewide significance are going to result in huge expenditures of money, I'd sure like to know that we're communicating with each other.
Chair McEwen, Senator Johnson, your first part of your question had to do with how do we make sure we're moving into the part two of the program and what those criteria will be.
Yeah.
Part two of the program, again, is focused on those statewide significant strategic investments. And there are some guidelines included in House Bill 2017 to help define what we think is a strategic investment along those lines. But that's where we'll need to move into that rulemaking exercise to put a little bit more meat and expectations about what are we truly looking for to meet that criteria. And that's where the form and the application will need to be updated to help the selection process ensure we're meeting those goals and objectives. The second part of your question, I believe, had to deal with coordination and how do we make sure we're working with others to ensure the right projects are rising to the top, if I paraphrase that correctly.
You have.
And really, the goal out of the part two of the program is to make sure we are having strategic investments for the state of Oregon. Again, it only comes into play if we have $75 million or more available out of the Connect Oregon program. And we'll need to work through that process to define who are the folks that need to sit around the table to make that selection process. Does it look different than what we have today? We already engage with area commissions on transportation, regional solution teams engage in the process, but is there something a little bit different within there we need to think about to ensure that the right kind of engagement is happening to inform that selection process?
One more. Also, by its very definition, and at least this is the way that I sort of thought about it as we were going through the process of building the bill, is statewide significance means statewide significance. And we have had a proclivity to want to spread the peanut butter so that everybody feels geographically enfranchised. Mm-hmm. A project of statewide significance, and let me go back to my moving the airport because it's absurd, but it makes the point, that could cost $100 million. My thinking is that if it is deemed strategically important to the benefit of the state of Oregon, you could suck up an enormous amount of money. And I don't know whether or not we've contemplated how cranky those that are left behind, if a single project or a couple of projects subscribe the entirety of the next iteration of Unsubscribed Connect. I think it's something we need to think about. Because our desire to want to make everybody feel good, I think, has left us with half-done projects. And if they're strategic, we ought to agree as Oregonians they're strategic. And if it happens to be in Senator Monroe's district, I get over it. But I have some expectation that my projects will get a turn in the barrel somewhere in the future.
That's a certainly an ongoing discussion and a very good point. What I'm hearing you, I think, describe in what I've heard so far today are more technical aspects of how the application is submitted. Could you touch a little bit about on whether this is going to shrink the timeline at all? Does this help in streamlining the process as far as how long it takes to get an application processed?
Chair McEwen, the timeline for processing the application and doing the selection processes, we did not address with this streamlined report. We are constantly looking to be more efficient within that process. How do we engage with the area commissions on transportation? How do we engage with those regional solution teams? How do we engage with those modal committee experts to help us evaluate the pros and the cons and those benefits that these projects potentially have? That part of the process still takes time, and wherever we can to try to find more efficiency in the timelines, we'll look for those.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sort of envisioned we would be doing that and not looking at the paperwork pile of it. So I'm just curious, can you give me a good revenue example? I mean, the present application is how many pages? And now that you've streamlined it, what's it really going to be? Is it going to be more pages, less pages?
Chair McEwen, Representative Boquist, I don't have the exact count on the number of pages of the current application in front of me, but I do believe with some of the changes we're talking about, it should yield some reductions. How much, I just don't know until we get the forms built. The other part of this is if we move to an online application form, it's really not even pages as much in how you kind of work through those screens of information. So it could also look and feel different than it was to previous applicants from a number of pages standpoint.
Well, Ms. Kutcher?
Yes, Senator
Just for sort of the record here and in my envisionment back, you know, and of course, this is, we're now in the weeds, and the nice thing is this committee gets to get in the weeds for I guess, at least till we're indentured here, or we get streamlined or cut ourselves, is that, you know, the basic idea in my concept, and I know literally nothing about Connect Oregon, but in my simple word vocabulary, as the Chief Justice said, it's the word of the bill, I sort of envision that we would be able to process it faster, move faster, and get these projects moving faster. Did I miss something, or is that the ultimate goal here?
Chair McEwen, Representative Senator Boquist, it's always our goal to make sure the process moves as efficiently as possible, with also making sure that we're doing the due diligence to make sure that selection process is working to select the right projects. The projects truly are ready to go, have the kind of benefits we're looking for from the program to move them forward.
Yeah. Representative McClain, then Senator Johnson.
I have one that's a little bit of an aside, but I don't know if you guys have been thinking about some of the issues that have been lately indicating that Intel and other chip makers have some issues with, you know, with some security. And every time I hear the word cloud now or put something on the cloud, then I'm wondering, you know, is this private, you know, business information that we would not want to have hacked into or whatever. And I just wonder if the state is starting to think about a process for big things like, you know, when we're asking for a lot of information, how we're going to protect wherever we are storing it.
Chair McEwen, Representative McClain, it's a very good question. It's something we'll have to work through if we can actually move into this cloud-based server. But we'll need to follow our DAS and agency policies. Public and identifiable information will need to be protected, and we'll have to follow that. We're still looking into what all those policies mean and how to meet those moving forward. But we do believe this is a potential tool that can help make the process better for applicants.
All right. Senator Johnson.
I would hope that one of the early screening questions would be, do you still have an open Connect Oregon project? And the second question, do you have a failed project in your organizational history? Turned back a grant, failed a grant, had a legal challenge to a grant? Those, to me, are foundational.
Chair McEwen, Senator Johnson, we'll definitely take those questions and see how we can work them.
Thank you. Chair Beyer?
Just a comment on the representative's point. Actually, it shouldn't make any difference because the information that they're providing for review would be a public record. And so even if it was paper, it's still available, so there shouldn't be anything there that it was in the cloud and got grabbed.
Thank
is not something
the,
to get
thank you for
list.
The security. I just feel like, you know, we have so much liability as a state that every time I hear something about patching, we need to patch that chip. That causes me to wonder.
Remember, these are people who are asking for funding.
Yes, that's true.
And they need to demonstrate why they need it.
It's
and should
to,
be
it's
able to have that all in the sunlight.
Senator Boquist.
Just because we ventured so far astray here, I fully wander. Yeah, and I fully agree with my good, you know, senator to my right, but to Representative McClain's key point, I believe there's a United States Supreme Court ruling in the last 6 months or a First Circuit Court of Appeals ruling, which is the Court of Appeals of precedence, that does say if it goes to the cloud to a third party after 6 months, they can use it and take it.
Okay.
So, her security question is very germane to the future of our IT operations here, regardless of this committee, but across the board.
Thank you.
Spend too much time listening to the
courts. Any other questions? I think the only comment, the only other comment I would make, and I believe I'm probably channeling Representative Smith in his absence here, is I think part of the reason that this idea of streamlining this process came up in the first place was to try and narrow that timeline down. So I think that's something that we will be looking towards in the future, and I appreciate the work that you've done kind of on the technical side of things to this point, but I think that there is some interest in trying to figure out how we can make this a more efficient process as far as how long the process takes as well. So there may be some more questions that come up about that in the future.
Okay.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
I'm having never filled out a Connect Oregon application, but many others in different times, I'm assuming these are the initial application is just sort of a tell us what your project is and are you ready to go. If they're awarded, there's a whole lot more due diligence. I assume the department would have to do in cutting the contract. I would get into more of the detailed questions about
Chairman McEwen, Senator Beyer, the application is really designed to provide the bulk of that information. We use that information from that application to actually fill in their grant award agreement that we enter into with the applicants. We do have to negotiate a few of those details. We don't have everything down to the final detail, but we do want to understand their project, their timeline, their cost estimates, all those key decision points.
Hmm. I would think if you were trying to, because you get a flood of applications, some of that would have, you could ask less at the start and more for those, because you're really looking at the concepts in terms of prioritization. But I'm not going to get in the way of your process.
Senator Johnson?
The Colonel's before me.
Senator Boquist.
I'm just back to my deal, because now I'm getting more puzzled here. You do these projects, right? You actually review these things yourself?
Representative McEwen, Senator Boquist, I have not reviewed these applications, but my staff with the Connect Oregon program have been part of this for the six cycles.
Well, I'm sort of back to the basic. I'm trying to even understand because, I mean, I generally you put forth and then there's first round, second round, so on and so forth. Since I don't know this at all, I'm in my colleague to my right here. That's strange. My colleague to my right here's Kim, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I mean, are we talking, is this like this? Is it like this? Is it like that?
This.
It's about, so it's like about this.
And that's a little bit low.
And how many are rejected?
I'm just, depends on the district.
Right. How many are normally rejected?
Chair McEwen, Senator Boquist, very few of the applications that come in are rejected, but we do review them to make sure they are eligible. As long as they are eligible, they move through the process for us to review and score, rank, and prioritize.
Follow up, Madam Chair. What I'm sort of driving at here is do we have, and I know we have limited funding, and I think that Senator Schroeder is funding. The question is do we have 125 organizations spending a whole lot of money with zero chance of getting anywhere because we're only going to give three projects out of the 125? And then what sort of a process have we created for 125 to do? Back to Senator Beyer's point, is there some way to get up and move faster by, you understand where I'm going here, okay? Paperwork reduction, though. Cut all those trees down. It's my district who's making the tree and the paper.
Senator Johnson.
The other thing, as long as we're talking, excuse me, this far afield, is the question of following on Senator Boquist. In some of the past iterations, very skillful applicants with huge staffs have submitted multiple applications. Mm-hmm. And I have wondered often about the equity of that. If you're the port of East Nowhere and you've got the, you know, one guy doing everything, you're not going to be competitive with a staff that can write seven applications. And it's bugged me when sometimes a single applicant has seven or eight projects in the hunt and shutting out some smaller jurisdiction that just didn't have the horsepower to write multiple applications or even write a good single application.
Yeah. Just a quick question.
Did you have a response?
Chair McEwen, Senator Johnson, we have, to the best of my knowledge, we haven't done an assessment of those kind of conditions between different applicants. But we are available to help guide even those that don't have deeper staffs in writing their proposals to provide some advice and direction. We don't help them write it, but we are available for questions and answers.
And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. I believe that there is an eye towards, what would you call it, regional equity, that there are local area commissions of transportation across the state, and I think the applications are looked at with some equity towards region. Is that not correct?
Yeah, which
Senator?
Hasn't always been good.
Yeah, I know. That's the
it's
peanut
like
butter
we
effect.
It's like we got to throw a few projects to this region because it's got to be equitable, and the projects are dreadful.
Senator, I think that was the impetus for the differentiation between that and then the projects of regional significance. I think that's where that discussion began, was get away from the peanut butter effect. So there's a somewhere in here there's a balance.
I don't know. I put peanut butter on my rat traps.
Me too.
Any further comments, questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, Representative.
So when you're in the process of developing this whole scheme of thing for the forms, the application, have you ever enlisted those who are on the outside who are actually going to be doing the practical application of completing a form and app to you? To help maybe put this all together?
Chair McEwen, Representative Olson, we, as part of our survey, we got a lot of good feedback from past applicants, and their feedback actually led to these recommendations, that these things would make it easier for them to apply.
Okay, thank you.
Any further comments, Senator Beyer?
Just one. I'm still back on my last point, thinking about that. And I don't want to change the process now, but I think something that you ought to think about, and particularly the smaller communities that try to apply for these, and I'm not talking about statewide so much. Oh, it could be, I suppose. I really wonder if you ought to think about exploring a two-step process where they're looking at turning in a briefer application that would say something like, yes, we've got it all ready to go and all that, but didn't demonstrate all of that. And if they then made the queue, then they'd have to complete a fuller application. There are a lot of different grant programs that kind of do a concept first for prioritization, with not a commitment that you're not going to get funded until you turn in a full application, but we're not going to put you through the full ordeal if we're not even interested in it. I'd hate to see it start all over now, but just think about that.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Johnson.
Absent any money, this all becomes a pretty academic exercise.
That's what I've been sitting here thinking.
I was going to bring that up.
And we continue to try and address that issue as we move through the short session. We do have a request in, as everyone knows, and hopefully we will have a different day before us. Thank you for your work, sir. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the informational hearing and open a work session and discuss introduction of committee legislative concepts. I want to start by, first of all, thanking everyone in this room and everyone on this panel for the work that went into House Bill 2017. Once again, we are here to try and make some, I would call them adjustments, technical fixes, some corrections. This was a very complex bill. There's a lot to it, and I think just about everybody here has read it, and you know how complex it was. We have invited people to comment on things that they think that need to be tweaked, fixed, technically adjusted, even to the point of where there's some recommendations or proposals for some policy change. And we're here today to take a look at those. During our last committee hearing, Patrick was kind enough to go through the list of items that have come across his desk prior to the bill being passed. And I think our legislative days in, was it December, November?
November.
Since then, I think some new things have come in. What I'd like Patrick to do now is to go through the items that have come across his desk since we last met. And then I would like Patrick to go ahead and walk us through the legislative concepts, 212 and 217. One is a technical fix bill. One is becoming the catch-all for everything that is not truly a technical fix, has more some more complexity to it, maybe some more controversy to it. And then we will address getting our committee bills dropped for this afternoon. So, Patrick, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So because we had worked off of that document that was referred to in November, the Omnibus 2017 Amendments List, I decided to use that as one of the basis for this conversation. So what I've done is I've reprinted that. It's at all your spots. It's also available on OLIS for everybody in the audience. Basically, it's the same document, the exact same document we worked on in November, except I have added, where applicable, the sections of the two LC drafts that we're referring to today that address that particular section in this 22-page document. So that's for your review. The other document that we're looking at is called the cross-reference for proposed 2017 amendments that are in LC 212 and 217. It's organized in order of section number for House Bill 2017. So they are in order. If you're looking at the enrolled House Bill 2017, this cross-reference lists the amendments in the two, the different changes in the two amendments in order in which they would appear in the enrolled bill. So that's for your reference as well. I have kept it very brief for purposes of this. I suspect as we move into this short session, I will expand on this to provide a greater level of detail of information. But for now, it's just about two lines on each one. And then, so just for clarification, the two substantive amendments we'll look at today are drafts we'll look at today are LC-212. That is what you referred to as the technical fix draft. It has only vetted and confirmed technical changes to House Bill 2017. The other document that we're looking at is the larger one, LC-217. We've been colloquially referring to that as the policy options draft, which means a lot of things besides policy options. It's changes that have more substantive effects. It's changes that that are diverging roads for the committee to decide on. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a single identified and unanimously agreed to solution to some of these issues, and so those things fell into LC-217. And it also has a couple items that will come at the end of this review that are unrelated to House Bill 2017 but fit in the relating clause, and so they're in there for discussion as well. So if you want, I can take us up. Probably the easiest way to do it is to go through the big, long 20-something page omnibus document that is listed as updated 1/12/18 and just review that. That's the document we reviewed in November, so we'll start with there. Okay. And just go through, and I'll explain where those changes ended up, if anywhere.
Chair Beyer.
The draft. Just a comment, just to keep in mind, because I think there's always a threat. People see these things and say, where did all this stuff come from? And
what did you look at me for?
This is most of the technical FISC bill. A lot of that were things that when we were doing it as a committee, you may reach back and remember, we said we're not going to get all of this fixed. We know some things, and we were keeping a list of things saying, we'll get to this in 18. That's mostly what's there, and they are truly technical items. The second part, much of which Patrick is talking about, is when we passed the bill and the agency started looking at it, there was kind of like I'd call the people saying, well, I think you said this, but I'm not sure. It could be this or that. And some of this is just, which way do you want us to go, legislature? A lot of that. And then the third part is there always is, and any time there's a bill coming up that looks like it's going to pass, is cats and dogs.
Senator Boquist.
And as normally, since we have a variety of sides here, just to be clear to the members of the committee and to the public, I mean, we have a list. The list came forward. The co-chairs, the vice chairs, and nobody made any decisions. We just said, here's this group of lists. That's what we have before. Yes. And unfortunately, I mean, this committee has not met, so there was no guidance to tell legislative council, do this, do that, don't right. do that. And so unfortunately, they got to have a very miserable Christmas. Thank you, legislative council, and put it all in here. So just because it's in here doesn't mean there's been any decision whatsoever on a topic. Period, because we haven't, the so-called secret four or whatever you call it, haven't even talked about this. We've just brought forth what we have.
In the spirit of transparency, every idea, every thought, every recommendation that came to Patrick on our behalf is in this document. So we are reviewing everything that everybody has asked us to review. So I think those points are very well taken, Senator.
Thank you
for the clarification. And it involved agencies. It involved stakeholders. It involved committee members. The door was open, and Patrick was kind enough to do air traffic control over all of this and is trying now to bring this to us in a form where we can now begin to piece by piece go through it and decide which pieces we want to include in it, which will become an amendment, as 217 did through the short session, to deal with the issues that are before us. And there are a number. So, Patrick, please begin.
Hey, Madam Co-Chair, just remember,
Senator.
Patrick has admitted that he might have missed something during Christmas. So if
yes.
your thing is not here, then please reach back out to Patrick. It's not because it was intentional.
Yep.
And I have to tell you, we owe Patrick a debt of gratitude. This has been complicated, and he's done a fine job. But we know this is not perfect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to expound on what Senator Boquist indicated, there are issues that may have been dropped through the sieve, as it were, that didn't get into here. There are also some issues that because of the complexity of them or the fact that there's, as I mentioned, multiple roads that could be taken, that legislative council couldn't just make a command decision and draft it one way when there's multiple approaches to things. So there will be certain issues that the committee may need to meet and weigh in on to give guidance to council whether they want to go forward with drafting, and if so, how to draft them before we can before they can make it into legislative concept form. So that's another reason why some things that if you're in the audience looking at these and you have were expecting a change may not be in this at this point.
And the good and bad news is that during the short session as a joint committee, we'll have about 3 weeks to wade through this.
First chamber deadline does not apply to the joint committee during session. So,
Mr. Brennan.
So just real quick, so starting on page 1, section 2, sub 3 of House Bill 2017, fiduciary responsibilities, that language is in the policy options draft 27 or LC 217, section 1. The long-range plans language is in 217, section 2. On page 2, you'll see there was a recommendations related to the Continuous Improvement Advisory Committee. Those was determined in November not to move forward with making those sideboards, to let the department deal with that on their own. City reporting on transportation infrastructure, that was in part based on a change recommended by LOC. That has made it into LC 217, section 3, dealing with making it easier for the small cities to meet their reporting requirements.
Senator Johnson.
I understand what Patrick's doing, but my question is, at what point are we going to weigh in, thumbs up, thumbs down on these, and what's the process going to be? You're just going through and describing what all is in the memorandum right now.
Yes.
Exactly. We were assigned a Friday afternoon slot with one meeting a week for this committee, and the good co-chair and myself have requested that we go back to our original schedule so we have plenty of time to work through all of these items.
Thank you.
So I believe we will be meeting. I don't know if it's official yet, but we should be meeting, I think, Monday and Wednesday from 5 to 7. So we will have plenty of time to walk through this. Senator?
I think more direct. These LCs, the intent is we introduce them today, and then we will work through and amend them out during the session.
Okay, but what Patrick is telling us is that on the one in the middle of page 2, that this is in LC 217, section 3.
Correct.
And the fact that the bill will be introduced is a mechanical function.
Exactly.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That by its introduction, we're not agreeing.
Correct.
That's correct.
Thank you.
And I'll make that statement when we come to it.
That is absolutely correct.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
And for you senators, I've already gone through this. I was bored at some point in time in the last 24 hours. No. And I've gone through this. And my intent is to kind of, as I did last time, is go around and meet with you or ask you to, you know, write your comments on this. And I will try and consolidate at least for the Senate side so that we have,
and we'll do the same thing.
You know, a basic genesis so we know who sort of is, yeah, forget this one. Yeah, this is a good idea. Yeah, it's disgusting.
Cool.
So I will be reaching out to the senators on our side.
All right, so be quiet, listen to Patrick, invite anybody that didn't get their stuff in here to get to Patrick,
and
we'll take it up at the next meeting.
Correct. He's the air Correct. Traffic control.
And I'll reach out to all of you
cool.
before then.
And we will say this multiple times today, and when we ask for the bills to be introduced, this does not commit anyone to anything. This is the starting point.
It's at the bottom of page 2. Proximity to aggregate sites was a consideration for STIP projects. LC 217, sections 4 to 5, eliminate that as a consideration for STIP consideration based on a recommendation from the department as to how to address the vagaries of that suggestion. The next one that's in there is in the technical fix bill, sections 1 to 2, fixes some cross-references for the director appointment. So then there's a couple that are on pages 3 and 4 that are not in there. The next one that's in either of the drafts is section 39K, which deals with a misreference to the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, which is now the Street Trust. So that's just a spelling correction. The next one you'll find, we skip all the way forward in the bill to section 52. That's dealing with the road use assessment fee. That one, along with sections 54 through 58, all address fee increases that are being rolled back to the original fee levels that existed before the passage of House Bill 2017, in large part due to an agreement that that was in place before the bill was enacted, which was that the truck fees that are in House Bill 2017 would be entirely in the form of weight mile tax increases. And that's how the entirety of the cost responsibility for the increases in House Bill 2017 would take place. So that's what, that explains the changes in 52 and 54 through 58. Those are in LC 217, sections 9 through 12. The next change, I believe, is on the bottom, middle of page 7. That deals with the percentage splits for the 50% that's allocated to the Department of Transportation. Those are being reverted to the 40-40-20 that that was considered before they were changed by House Bill 2017. The next change below that is just some clarifying language for some of the identified transportation projects. That's in LC 212-5. There's a misspelling that's also fixed in there, and I believe there's one other change that's not listed in here, but is nonetheless in the document, the cross-reference document. There was a change. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, Madam Chair. So just pretend I didn't say any of that. So then the next one goes down to Section 71L. This bill, as well as the JTA, required quarterly reports from the department to the Legislative Assembly on the new revenues that are brought in by both of those bills. The department has suggested that rather than doing quarterly reports, it might be more useful and less repetitive to do semi-annual reports. So LC 217, Section 17 changes the reporting requirement for House Bill 2017 as well as the reporting requirement in existing statute for the JTA to semi-annual reports instead. Next up, top of page 9, the small county allocation, there was a glitch in how that formula was put together, so that's fixed in LC 212, sections 6 and 7. The next one that is in either the drafts is section 84, sub 1. That deals with the park subaccount transfer. This clarifies that it's in LC 217, sections 18 and 19. It clarifies when the money will come out, from what part of the park subaccount it will come out, and there is also a section in LC 217 that sunsets that $4 million allocation in 2024. That was at the request of the Parks Department. That's the reason that's in there. So page 10, section 85, this is dealing with the report we received today, the Connect Oregon Streamlining Report. That was originally supposed to be required by September of last year, so we just moved the dates around and confirmed that that report that we received today meets that statutory requirement. So that's a technical fix in LC 212. The middle of page 11, we did some work on redefining the definition of new vehicle. For the privilege tax, there was some issue with the fact that trailers were intended to be taxable motor vehicles in the bill. However, the definition that was used references an odometer reading. And so the fix to that was that it would simply says that have an odometer reading of 7,500 miles or have been used for or have traveled to Oregon roads. I forget the exact language it's in the LC, but it's designed to get at
to include
vehicles that do not have odometers but are nonetheless subject to the privilege tax. Page 12, the definition of vehicle dealer for purposes of the privilege tax has been addressed by the technical fix bill LC 212 and section 10. Section 11 of the technical fix LC 212 addresses some language used to clarify what it means to be provided valid receipt to the purchaser for the bicycle tax. So then we skip all the way down to section 100. Section 100 is simply syncing due dates for remitting use and excise taxes based on a recommendation from the Department of Revenue to sync with DMV paperwork filing requirements. It changes a 20-day horizon to a 30-day horizon for that purpose. Section 111 is addressed in LC 212, section 13. It's another technical fix. It's just a removal of the word other to clarify the language in there. That was recommended by Ledge Council. At the top of page 15, this is where this is maybe the most wide-ranging substantive change to the bill. When our list included a consideration of maybe going with a different name besides the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, That recommendation was put forward without a recommendation of what to call it. So Legislative Council has recommended, or just maybe this is just spitballing, but the name that is replaced the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, and that name change was maybe suggested because there's some confusion between the STIP, which has been in existence for a while, and the STIF, which is now created. So they have decided, the recommendation was to rename this, oh boy, I'm going to have to look, make sure I was doing good.
Mr.
The
Brennan?
Public Transportation Services Improvement Fund. So,
could you tell us what the STIF refers to?
Oh yeah, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund is the fund that will receive monies from the statewide employee payroll tax for use to advance and enhance transit services.
What is happening is people are confusing STIF and STIP. They are very different animals. The nomenclature makes it difficult, so I think this is transit is what this is.
And the new name that's given here has the equally roll-off-the-tongue acronym of PITSIF. So just try for everybody to kind of get that into as an earworm in their brains as well. So, but again, that's merely a suggestion.
Continue to work on this.
But LC 217 includes, renames everything in House Bill 2017 with that, should the committee adopt the provisions thereof.
Or colleagues, come up with something better, if you would like. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The next change is to Section 122L, which adds language that allows the Department of Transportation to use parts of the 1% that the department has allocated from STIF funds for carrying out the technical assistance center that's in the bill to also carry out the administration of the fund itself. The department was not given funds to do that, and it will have some expense, so they can use part of the 1% for that purpose, according to 217, Section 21. Another change that's in there was recommended by TriMet. The bill, as written, specifies that monies in the STIF may not be used for light rail. However, the department wanted to clarify that the intent of the Legislative Assembly when they indicated that is that it will not be used for light rail capital improvements. There was some concern raised by TriMet attorneys that provision, as it was written, could prevent them from doing low-income fare assistance because some of those people receiving that assistance may ride light rail, and as a result, that could be construed as saying that that's money is being used for light rail. So it's just a clarification that it's light rail capital improvement. So that's the change made. That's another change made in Section 21 of LC 217. The third change in there is some modification of the language relating to how money will flow between the qualified entities that receive the money and the transportation service providers that will be expending the money. So that's just some clarifying language. It was based on some recommendations brought forward by some transit providers. Down at the bottom of page 16, there's a couple sections, three sections actually, in LC 217 that deal with the relationship between the Travel Information Council and the U.S. Forest Service on the government camp rest area. So there's just some clarifying language in there. There's a report that's due, so it explains, makes some changes about what that report will entail. Section 34, jurisdictional transfers. The Department of Transportation and Lane County agreed that there were three additional bridges that should remain with ODOT until they're replaced, at which time they would be transferred. So that's what that change is, Madam Chair. And then we scroll over to page 18, and there is a change in the technical fix bill that specifies that the sections of the bill relating to the electric vehicle incentive programs will be made part of ORS 468. That's in order to give DEQ enforcement authority over those sections, since they are the administrative body for that. And then I believe we don't see another one until we get to Section 150. There are some changes in LC 217 made with the charge ahead vehicle rebate program. The bill as written specified that to qualify for that, that's the second of the two incentive programs. The bill as written required that in order to qualify for that, that you have to junk a high emission vehicle. There were a lot of questions that were raised about that, a lot of ramifications that would have had. So the bill, the LC 217 section 32 deletes that that requirement that that be the case, but it does give the Department of Environmental Quality, who administers the program, the authority to that they may impose that as a requirement. So the bill itself would not require it, but it gives authorization to do that at some future point. And that also then is addressed at the top of the next page, the vehicle scrapping requirement. It does address that in there as well. So that's also part of the same change. And then there were some definitions of that high emission passenger motor vehicle made as a different suggestion. Those ended up in the technical fix bill, but that would be necessary should the committee not go ahead with the portion of that we just talked about, which would eliminate that requirement entirely. But because they're two separate suggestions, they both ended up lumped into these two drafts. And that, I think, exhausts the list as we had it in November. There are, in the cross-reference, you'll see there are a few that are listed as new sections. I can just briefly go over the last three on the list. Those are LC 217 section 33 eliminates the statutory limit on the number of sets of Pacific Wonderland registration plates. The department has indicated that we'll probably reach the 80,000 statutory limit sometime in the middle of this year. So that would simply eliminate that cap entirely, so there would be no cap anymore as written in section 33. Section 34 extends the seatbelt exemption for operators of tribal government public transportation vehicles to make it similar with other transit operators. That was requested by CTUIR on the eastern side of the state. And then sections 35 through 38 are a redraft to Senate Bill 778 from 2017 that would direct the Department of Transportation to provide compensation to outdoor advertising sign companies should their signs be damaged, destroyed, or forced to move due to construction projects. That's a very quick
perfectly clear overview. To everyone.
You bet. That's good.
Patrick, thank you very much for your work. As you can see, we have a great deal of work to do, hence our desire to have two meetings a week instead of one on a Friday afternoon. And I think we've been granted that request. I would also like to note, I don't think it's been officially announced yet, but I feel comfortable indicating that with the severance of Representative Bentz from this side of our committee and over to the upper chamber, that Representative Olson has kindly agreed to step in his stead as vice chair. It's not official yet, but I believe that I wanted him here today to make sure that he's fully engaged in this process as we move forward. And speaking to Representative Smith and McLean and Representative Leibman, we will be contacting you to sit down and figure out kind of the lay of the land on this side as to how you want to move forward with some of these important issues. So it should be official soon, but that's why Representative Olson is sitting here with us today.
Open work session?
We did open a work session.
I did work.
I did.
Would you like a motion?
I did. I also would like to just, Representative Vile has been stalwart. Please, you're welcome to sit at the dais with us if you choose any time, but we appreciate your diligence in being at, I believe, almost every single meeting we've had, and I just wanted to acknowledge your presence here on the record today, and thank you for your interest in this process. Yes, sir. Please, I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the following legislative concept drafts be introduced as committee measures. LC 212, dated January 9, 2018. LC 217, dated January 10, 2018. LC 219, dated December 18, 2017.
Chair Beyer moves the following LC drafts be introduced as committee measures. LC 212, dated 1-9-18. LC 217, dated 1-10-18. LC 219 dated 12-18-17. Is there any discussion? Senator Boak.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just for the disclosure and reminder, colleagues, mostly for the public, because we know is voting to introduce a legislative concept does not mean you support or oppose any part of the bills we have before us. There are simply concepts to be put forward and will be discussed later in the future. And for the public, once again, these are concepts put forward. No member that's voting to introduce it is either supporting or opposing any of those. We're just putting those forth for future discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification, Senator. I think we have that on the record at least three times now, so it should be abundantly clear. But I think it's very important for those of you here in the audience and those who are watching to clearly understand that these are just that. They're just concepts, and there will be work done on them. Any other discussion? If not, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion passes.
Play ball.
Any comments for the good of the order? All right. And on that note, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
I'll be sending all of you my notes from this.